So Meredith is going to be speaking to us on reframing the question, the obesity epidemic and the voices of the fatosphere. So Meredith is a second year graduate student in the Department of Sociology at Brown University, and she has a BA in Sociology from Brandeis University. Her current research focuses on conceptions of health and wellness, the utilization of embodiment experience as a source of lay expertise, and online communities. Prior to beginning her studies at Brown, Ms. Postel worked for 6 years in the U.S. Health Division of ABT Associates, Inc. Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Meredith.
So I wanted to thank you. That was actually a really wonderful setup to my project. This represents a small portion of the work I'm doing for my master's project right now. Which has to be finished pretty soon, which is a little scary. And so I'm looking at the... Oh, I'm sorry. I have to... Disclosures. I have no relationships to disclose. And just as a quick overview, I'm going to give a context. It's going to be really short because, as I said, you set it up so nicely. I'm going to talk about what is the fat acceptance movement and why they're interesting, a little bit on data and methods, and then get right into sort of very specific healthcare impacts and conclusions that we may draw. As everybody in the room knows, there's an obesity epidemic, and that obesity rates are very high. It's over a third of adults and almost 20% of youth. According to the CDC, those rates have at least leveled off. They're not dramatically increasing at this point, which I think is an interesting contextual piece. And this second point is a little bit old, but it, almost 14 years ago, nearly half of women in the U.S. and 33% of men reported trying to lose weight, regardless of whether or not they were obese clinically. So, with the context of your presentation, there's a great deal of fat stigma right now and the obesity stigma in the U.S. And I think it's safe to say that most everybody knows that they shouldn't be heavy, and that there are things they're supposed to be able to do to lose weight. In that context, there's a group called the Fat Acceptance Movement. They have a real-world presence. There's the National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance, which was founded in 1969. I'm very interested in the online component that has emerged. It's definitely been around since 2007. I think it's been a presence since before that, but social media is a sort of funny, diffuse world, and it's sort of hard to define boundaries of groups and when their origins and stuff like that. I'm focusing on the bloggers who post to an RSS feed called The Notes from the Fatosphere. The fatosphere simply means the blogging sphere of people who blog for fat acceptance. And it's interesting to note, particularly for this panel, the fatosphere is a very female space. In a very recent interview study, more than 80% of the participants in the interview study were female, and that was a fairly significant portion of people who were active in the fatosphere at that time. So it's a qualitative analysis of the blog content. For the master's, I'm actually working on content posted in May and June of this year. That's almost 300 posts. The number of bloggers is a little fuzzy because there are a couple of blogs that concatenate multiple authors into one space, and sometimes those authors also have blogs. So there's some counting funniness that goes on, the particularly Fierce Free-Thinking Fatties and the Fat Health blog. Just as a note, a lot of my quotes are going to come from the Fat Health blog because it's particularly pithy and a good summary of a lot of their experiences. For this presentation, I'm focusing on their experiences, particularly with health and healthcare professionals. These are not folks, you know, they're saying we don't want obesity to be stigmatized anymore, we want it to be more socially acceptable, and many of them actually challenge the medical definition of obesity as a disease. But they're not people who are rejecting healthcare outright. They actively seek out healthcare, and as you'll see in the following example quotes, they report a number of experiences that reduce their trust and rapport with the healthcare system. Weight is treated as the primary diagnosis of concern, and weight loss is usually prioritized over other treatments in their interactions that they're reporting. They also feel that practitioners don't trust their self-reports and often don't even trust their own in-office measurements of the health of these patients. And heavy patients feel that they receive a different standard of care as a result of their weight. For example, this is, again, I tried to pick the best examples of these, but in terms of weight and weight loss treatment being prioritized, this woman's mother went to the doctor because she was experiencing joint pain. And as she says, my mother's doctor refused to consider her symptoms until she lost 10 pounds. She did. And then he told her to lose 20 more, and she tried, but she was in constant pain and couldn't exercise. Plus, she was 60 years old. Finally, he humored her, which is his wording, and he ran some tests and found that she had rheumatoid arthritis. She suffered for months and sustained permanent joint damage because he didn't like the way her ass looked. Pardon my language, I'm quoting from the internet. I have to apologize. This is actually the wrong introduction for this quote. This patient had had breathing difficulties, particularly at night, not sudden weight loss. And I apologize to anyone watching the recording. But the quote is still true. This woman always had a very low blood pressure. But when she went into the doctor with this breathing problem, the nurse who was getting her, you know, doing the initial measurements, didn't trust her low blood pressure. It was 118 over 68, which was even a little high for her usually. She said she was usually around 110 over 68. And the nurse says, someone your size doesn't usually have such a low BP. She must have been getting an improper reading because of the fat on my arm, which meant she had to take it again on the same arm and again on the opposite arm. And when by the third time she was still getting the same number, she finally decided it was a fluke. She concluded it must be low to whatever was making me sick and ushered me in to wait for the consulting physician. So there's also a lot of examples where patient self-report of I eat healthfully and I exercise is mistrusted, but I think this is particularly compelling because the nurse doesn't trust the measurements she's getting in her own office with her own equipment, and it has to be a fluke. It can't possibly be that this heavy woman has a low blood pressure. And there's often this feeling that if you've got a low blood pressure, or rather, you can't possibly have a low blood pressure, or you can't possibly be engaging in these healthy behaviors you're telling me about, because if you were, you wouldn't be fat. And so the evidence of my eyes contradicts any truth you might be telling me. And this is not a specific care example, but this is a very good summary of the sentiment at the moment in the fatosphere, that they perceive a double standard for heavy patients. As this blogger who goes by the name Fat Heffalump says, what regularly happens to fat people who present with all of the markers of restrictive purging exercise mania is that we are told to keep up the good work instead of having our illnesses recognized. Behaviors which are widely recognized as destructive, disordered behavior in thin people are considered a positive lifestyle change in fat people and are actively encouraged. It was certainly that for me for many, many years through my suffering, and it doesn't seem like it's changed much. So fat people are being failed at by most eating disorder support organizations, the medical healthcare industry, and the general eating disorder community still. I have another example if you want to see it during the question and answer period where a woman goes to a psychiatrist because she thinks she's eating disordered, and the psychiatrist says, well, you haven't lost any weight, so would you like some advice on weight loss, not care for a psychiatric condition? And I think this ties in very neatly with your substance abuse example. And as a result, a lot of these patients are withdrawing emotionally and even physically from healthcare interactions. This woman who blogs under Fat Chick's Rule says, I realize that in my lifetime I've had 3 different dentists and 3 different gynecologists, but a whopping 12 primary care doctors. I dropped 5 of them for either pressuring me to lose weight and or assuming I had fat-related diseases. And I'll skip the rest of the quote, but they've been engaging in... They read the literature. They recognize that their experiences aren't happening. You know, it's not just crazy. They're not just seeing it individually, but there's a lot of research coming out about doctor prejudice relating to obesity. And as a result, they're basically losing faith in healthcare. And this is another example of engaging with literature. It comes in the context of her partner having a bad experience at the doctor due to weight. But she says, reader Amanda, let me know about a new study that I find not at all shocking. The study shows that doctors are not as warm, empathetic, or generally nice to us as they are to their thin patients. I imagine that it's difficult for them to fit in niceties when they're so very busy ignoring what we say to them and prescribing weight loss for everything that's wrong with us. So I think, as I've said, there are some serious consequences with regards to healthcare in general. If you believe that obesity is a big risk factor, and then you hear that all of these constant reminders about how bad fat is and how important weight loss is, participants in the fatosphere are reporting avoiding doctors because of this body size focus and these unpleasant interactions. They change doctors frequently or lack a primary care doctor altogether. But again, they want care. These are not women who are rejecting the idea of healthcare. They're simply being driven away from healthcare providers by these attitudes. And it's important to remember that these public health messages don't happen in a vacuum. These are women who are every day exposed, and these are just a random sampling of stuff I've found in the past couple of months, to everyday stigma. So we have this charming professor who was teaching at NYU at the time who tweeted, "Dear obese PhD applicants, if you don't have the willpower to stop eating carbs, then you don't have the willpower to do a dissertation." He later announced that this was really just a social experiment after he'd gotten a lot of backlash. Yeah. And some of you may have seen this lady on the news, the Fit Mom from Facebook. She's got a rockin' bod, 3 kids, and a full-time job, so what's your excuse if you can't look like her? The CEO of Abercrombie & Fitch has announced that he doesn't want unattractive, and that includes fat people, to wear his clothing. That's not the brand he wants to advertise. And this woman in North Dakota a couple weeks ago on Halloween, announced, I don't know if she actually did this, that she was going to give out letters to children who she deemed moderately obese instead of candy. So she was going to make this determination when she opened the door. Some kids would get candy and some kids would get letters. I have the full letter later, again, if anyone wants to see it. But she says, "Your child is, in my opinion, moderately obese and should not be consuming sugar and treats to the extent of some children this Halloween." We believe very much as a public health organization that obesity is not healthy, and we think it's very important to remind people and educate people, but these messages get piled on top of all kinds of other social messages, and the public health messages can be seen to be okaying this sort of thing, justifying and legitimizing bullying behavior like this. And I think if we really want to engage people in health, it's not enough to try and make them lose weight. We need to have them be engaged in healthcare in general. And at the moment, the way we are messaging is driving people away. It's not bringing people in. So thank you very much.